Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, December 1st, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Had to have a little December humor there. Ho, ho, ho. Anyway, it's been a long day here at Discount.
You're right on the little part.
All right. But we had a little move in gold today to the upside, up 430 at 1,069.80. Silver is up 9 cents today at $14.25. Platinum was up 8 at 842. Palladium was down 4 at $543. A big day in the market, don't know why, but you have the USDX today down 42 at 99.78. Crude oil was down 4 cents at 41.61. And the paper markets today, not quite sure what they're rejoicing, but the Dow is up 168 points at 17,888. The NASDAQ was up 47 at 51.56. S&P was up 22, up over 1% at 21.02. I wonder what kind of agreement Obama made over there in France. 10-year yield, 2.16%, down 0.06. European Asian markets were all up big. Hong Kong was up almost 1.75%. Japan was up 1.33%. Germany was down 1%. London was up just about 39 points. So mixed bag in the European markets. The euro was 1.06, up 0.60. So not quite sure what the markets were cheering about. That global warming meeting is going on over, you know, it's really stupid. Because here they are, all of them over, it's not a treaty, it doesn't mean anything. They're all over there pledging millions and billions of dollars to go into fight global warming. And all, you know what it reminds me of, Al? Just reminds me of all these, you know, heads of states that will probably not be in office a year from now, and we know one won't be, but, you know, probably a lot of these other ones are on the cusp of losing their positions. It's like they're opening and they're bringing in all, it's a paycheck. It's a bonus for these guys. And it's just like, I just, you know, it doesn't even make any sense.
Well, you know, it does make sense a little bit from this perspective. You see Obama using this as one of his excuses.
I know.
It's his primary excuse for not bombing ISIS.
Yeah.
He was afraid it would cause environmental damage. Now, what that suggests, and it doesn't prove it yet, but it does suggest that the powers that be are going to try to make a real push on global warming and try to get the world to say, oh my gosh, we've got to do something. And I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm saying that whatever is going on with global warming, and there's a great deal of debate as to whether it's real or false, plus whether it's caused by solar cycles rather than man-made causes. There's all kinds of, nobody knows for sure, in my opinion, what's really going on here, or if anything's going on. Some people deny. The point is that the government seems, the way we're listening to Obama talk about it, it seems that he really wants to push that as a credible reason to put more restrictions on the public, more restrictions on business,
well,
more restrictions on whatever. Maybe raise taxes. I don't know what. But it looks like
I got an idea.
In his last year, maybe this is what he expects to do. Maybe what he expects to use as his primary reason to mess with everybody. Yep. Now, I don't know that that's true.
It just came to mind. I get it now. You know, we talk about a universal trade unit, you know, one world currency. We talk about a one world government. Well, the one world government has to be funded. So, I mean, we talk about climate change. We talk about taxes. There's a lot of taxes that are going to be going in. And what a great way to fund the global government is through this fake climate change, global warming, because they will pass these big fine, these big taxes and so forth. They will take in lots of money based on this. You're also going to have, so that's just my thought, just sort of, it's going to be funding.
They talked about using something like carbon credits in the past. I can't recall the exact term, but they were going to calculate how much carbon you put into the atmosphere in each country, and each country would be allocated a certain amount of carbon credits, and they could only put that much carbon into the atmosphere, and some countries would be able to sell their carbon credits to other countries. I don't know. It's one of those things.
You know,
it is insofar as the petrodollar is not as strong as it has been in the past and seems likely to become weaker in the future. All of a sudden, it's crossing my mind. I'm wondering, do you suppose they could be using carbon credits as a substitute for petroleum? We had the petrodollar, which was effectively backed by petroleum. Are we going to have a carbon dollar that's effectively backed by carbon credits?
I don't believe so. No.
Oh, my.
No, because, I mean, we've been through the petrodollar route. And the whole point is they want an internet. I don't think that's going to be an international currency.
Well, I'm not saying that it is.
They want the money.
Exploring.
They want the money. They need the funding, and that's what it's going to be about. How else can we get what? How can we get more from the people? And then after this climate change and the global warming and so forth, what's the next big item to touch on? And that's population. You know, I mean, the two go kind of hand in hand if you follow what they believe and what they report and so forth. I saw a comment from somebody that says, well, you know what, at all of this information that comes about these predictions on this climate change is all based on computer models. These computer models can't even get the right direction of a hurricane that starts in the Gulf. So, you know, unless there was more credible information and more accurate information, if they wanted to really do something about our environments, why not tackle plastics? That probably does more damage to our environment than a cow passing gas and all those satellites that are going up into the air and the cars that drive. I mean, it's just really...
The whole thing is bizarre, and where were the problem? The big problem is, from my perspective, the government increasingly relies on the idea advocated by Hillary Clinton and Rahm Emanuel, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste.
It's not even a crisis.
Meaning, the point behind any time a crisis turns up, you should celebrate because it can be used to advance your agenda. All right? I don't care what it is. If there's a crisis, we can use it to advance the agenda that is opposed to global warming. Or, you know, name whatever your particular pet peeve is. And my pet peeve is that the crisis, if it's really a crisis, should simply be solved without exterior reasons, without, you know, using it, taking advantage. Crisis is not something we should take advantage of. I don't doubt people have been taking advantage of crises, perhaps throughout recorded history. But still, from a moral perspective, you should just, all right, we've got a crisis. Let's just put, it's a, like having a fire. Let's just put the fire out. Let's not figure out how we can make a buck off the fire. Let's just put the fire out. How about that?
We don't know if this is a fire. I mean, that's the whole point. There isn't any proof that shows that this is a fire. However, this is one instance. This is a problem that they have created that brings these heads of states all together, which, again, it shows more of the association to just put another nail in this global governments, global currency, global tax, global governing, global laws, global Wall Street, global financing, global everything. And it's just
you have to stop saying the word global.
Stop. Hey, let's talk about
words,
U.S.
It's a funny thing about words. When you say a word repeatedly, it
I was making a point, Al, okay?
I get that. I'm just making another point.
Let's go on to
if you say global, pretty soon it's
you got
just,
it, Al. Sound. You got it.
No, I don't think so. I haven't heard anyone else but you say you got it. Frank, did you get it? You haven't said anything. Frank hasn't said anything yet.
U.S. manufacturing fell in November due to declines in new orders and low oil prices. It plummeted basically last month to the lowest level in more than 6 years. They're going to blame it on the stronger dollar. And they're going to blame it on low oil prices that cut the new orders. But the index dropped to 48.6 from 50.1 in October. 2 years ago, the same report came out. Manufacturing Index, the Institute of Supply Management, the index was 57.3. And at that time, it was everyone was so excited and claimed it was a rebound in all the world economies. Europe was doing well. So what happened in 2 years? Again, it's just another proof of how they've lied through all these years. They were talking about how American factories were outpacing their global counterparts. Really? And since we have almost a, 15, 16, 70% drop in 2 years, how can Janet Yellen even consider raising rates? The index has tumbled below this critical level for the first time since November 2012, and it now rests at the lowest level since 2009. So they talk about lower oil prices that have led these energy firms to slash their orders for steel pipe and other equipment for drilling. So we've seen the factory demands curb. So, again, just another sign that things are not doing all as well. And China's manufacturing index, it was also released, slipped for the fourth straight month. And, they have stimulus in there trying to support their growth. So, again, it just proves stimulus doesn't really work. It doesn't have the growth that they expect. But their index fell just a little bit, 49.6 from 49.8 the previous month. But you have all these countries, Brazil, China, Europe, they're all major trade partners, and all their economies are very fragile. You have Japan in a recession, you have Canada. Some reports say they are in a recession, others say they're just in a downturn. So the world economies are not doing as well as they want us to believe.
Well, I agree with you. One of the questions is, when they talk about stimulus, quantitative easing, for example, or zero interest rates policy, ZERP. When we have QE or ZERP, these don't appear to work. Why not? And the answer appears to me to be that they are based on the assumption that we have an economic system that still functions according to the same rules of economics as have existed for the past several centuries. I think the reason these stimulus programs don't work is because we have a completely different economic system right now than we have had for, I don't know, arguably for a couple hundred years anyway.
Yeah, it's called debt.
Pardon me?
It's called debt.
Yeah, that's the problem. We are treating debt as if it's an asset. Prior to, the dollar was still an asset-based currency, at least in international trade, up until 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window. After that, it's been a pure fiat currency and more a pure debt-based currency. And we have been taught, conditioned, I don't know, made to be ignorant and indifferent to the concept, the idea that a debt can't be an asset. At least not the same way as you buy an ounce of gold, you have an asset. You buy a piece of paper that entitles you to an ounce of gold, well, maybe you got an asset and maybe you don't, but you don't have the same asset as you have with an ounce of gold that's in your hand. If you start treating these paper debt instruments as if they are assets, and by paper debt instruments, I especially mean there's a bunch of varieties of them, but especially United States Treasuries, they're not backed by anything other than a promise to pay in a world where there are no payments. Very few people understand the distinction in meaning between paying a debt and discharging a debt. And all we do with our Federal Reserve notes legally is we discharge them, meaning we don't have to pay them right now because we are broke, bankrupt. How do they know? Because we show up to say, here, will you take this piece of paper in return for a car?
It's not even paper anymore. It's just digits anymore.
Well, it's digital. Digits. It doesn't matter. Will you take? And people are accepting this to keep the wheels turning. But where I'm going with all of this is I think quantitative easing doesn't work. It would have worked if we still had an asset-based monetary system. I think zero interest rate percentages, I think they may have worked if we still had an asset-based monetary system. System backed by gold, by silver, by precious metals. But when we moved away from that, said, hooray, we have a brave new world. We have a wonderful new system here, and all we have to do is make a promise to pay, and then that is considered to be an asset. Somebody signed his name to a piece of paper, and we'll treat it as if it's $100,000 in gold or $100,000 in silver or whatever. I think the reason the historic, the conventional control mechanisms used to manipulate and control an economy, they don't work because the economy is no longer running on an asset-based currency. It's running on a debt-based currency. It's like having negative numbers, you understand, rather than positive numbers. It changes your mathematical formulas. And I don't know if I'm making that very clear, but I think that's the problem they've got. We're in a world right now where we can't get effective economic controls unless and until we return to an asset-based monetary system. As long as we've got this extend and pretend and mere promises to pay, we treat them as assets. I don't think QE is going to work. I don't think zero interest rates are going to work. I don't think any of it's going to work, which means we're headed for trouble. We're also headed for commercials, which we're going to take right now. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll-free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
It's the December 1st special that we have today. We have a quarter ounce. We still have a quarter ounce American Gold Eagle coins. We have 21 ounce American Silver Eagle coins. And the total price is $660. It includes all your shipping costs. Give us a call at 800-375-4188. It's a quarter ounce American Gold Eagle, 21 ounce Silver Eagle coins. It's a full tube, and they're 2015s, and it includes all your shipping costs, $660. Make sure you get to our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and of course, you can listen to our programs online, live right from the website, and of course all the archives are posted there too. So make sure you take the time out to get there, and if you have any questions and you'd like to email me, you may do so at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. There's a couple of other reports out today. Congress, they reached an agreement on a five-year bill to keep highway and transit aid going to those states. They reached an agreement, a five-year, $281 billion transportation bill. It's going to increase spending to address all these aging and congested highways and transit systems. And Obama has been working on that through his whole entire administration. So, yes, he only has a year left, so let's give him everything that he wants. He's worked so hard. This bill is expected to be filed by the congressional negotiators this afternoon. It's going to boost highway spending by 4.9% and transit spending by 18.1% over the life of the bill. course, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, isn't going to provide any official figures until later this week. So by then, everybody will have forgotten. But they were actually looking for $400 billion over 6 years. So I'm sure they'll get to $400 billion in 6 years, but they're just not going to state it today. And I would expect to see your gasoline taxes rise, the federal 18.4 cents a gallon gas tax. That was the main source of the Highway Trust Fund. It hasn't been increased since 1993. It's not enough to cover the annual spending, so I would expect to see that increase. So there's a little reason to lower your oil prices and to lower your gasoline prices so they can tack on more taxes. And most people will say, oh, well, gee, it dropped. So why not?
Realistically, the government is losing money at lower prices on the gasoline. If they're only getting, say, tell me what the tax is.
18.4 cents a gallon.
Okay, then it isn't affected by the price. They get 18 cents a gallon regardless of whether the price of gasoline is a buck a gallon or $10 a gallon. At the moment, they still get 18 cents. So their only interest is in selling. In fact, they would make more money if they sold more gasoline. Lower prices, sell more gasoline, government makes more gasoline tax.
But it doesn't really seem that people are purchasing more gasoline. But, hey. You and I talked. We'll try to get through these real quick. There's a new cybersecurity bill that's supposed to add more secrecy for companies under public record laws. And this is just—it's to encourage companies to share information about cyber threats with the U.S. government. It includes measures that could significantly limit what details, if any, the public can review about the program through federal and state public record laws. The legislation has already passed. It has broad support in both houses of Congress, but it is not yet finalized. And it would keep secret any information a company hands over to the Obama administration under this new agreement, including specifics the firms decide themselves shouldn't be disclosed. So, you know.
So if they decide they want to disclose something about an individual, but the firm decides they don't want it publicly known, they'll have an opportunity to do that. That would be one way of looking at it if you're of a conspiratorial bent. The other point, though, seems to be, it sounds from what you're reading, that their intention is if a corporation catches wind of some outfit that's trying to hack into their computers, they can share that information with the federal government, and the federal government won't, and the public record won't disclose that they shared that information, point one, but more importantly, won't disclose what they did to defeat the hackers. Right? They want to keep that. They're going to keep that secret. They don't want that made available where the hackers can learn from the public record how to beat the system.
Transparency advocates said that this new law would provide excessive cover to tech companies through new restrictions to the U.S. Freedom of Information. So, yes, you are absolutely correct. These new restrictions to the U.S. Freedom of Information Act, which also supersedes state and tribal open record laws. So again, it seems like it's there to protect Americans, but...
It's there to protect some Americans.
It's there to protect.
It's like Animal Farm. All animals are created equal, but some are more equal. Okay.
Then there was.
This is to protect the ones that are more equal.
Then there was another law. Investigators would need a search warrant to get people's old emails under a bill. And again, this was considered today by the House panel looking to update a nearly 30-year federal law to reflect today's communications. And so the law gave the government access to emails older than 180 days with just a subpoena. Back in those days, they didn't have enough storage to hold emails longer than 6 months. So anything longer than that was considered abandoned at that time. The government uses subpoenas to internet service providers like Google or Yahoo to obtain people's emails. Now, this bill, they would require agents to get a search warrant, which generally requires probable cause that a crime has occurred. Exceptions in the bill would allow agents to obtain emails in terrorism investigations without any changes. But there was another part of this, Al, that I thought was kind of interesting. It's like, you know, this also gives investigators to wait up to 10 days to provide notice of the warrant to the subject.
You mean they get the warrant today and they don't have to tell the subject about it for 10 days?
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting.
But let me finish. As well as a gag order in certain circumstances so that the person would not be notified at all.
Well, it seems to me, well, yeah, I get that. I mean, you got to roll it around the back of your mind a little bit. They're going to have a warrant. It's like saying, well, you've got a stack of emails sitting there in the corner of your room. They get a warrant to come get your email. They've got to show you the warrant before they take the email. But apparently they're saying, no, we don't. We don't have to show them. We'll get a warrant. What difference does it make? I mean, what is the significance of the warrant if you don't have to show it to the person whose property is being seized? What's the difference? If someone comes in and wants to seize my property and they say, we have a warrant, I say, let me see it. No, we can't show it to you. Trust us, we got one. What's the difference between that and somebody just wants to come in and seize my property without a warrant? The idea, in theory, and I think I understand what the answer to the question is, they're going to serve the warrant on Yahoo or whoever it is that's serving, whoever it is that's holding the email, and they're not going to tell me that they're serving a warrant on Yahoo. Yahoo will get the warrant. I won't have to be told. Is that what...
Well, it just says it allows them a wait up to 10 days to provide notice of the warrant to the subject.
So yeah, I get that. I'm still saying I think the warrant will go to Yahoo, and it'll be a warrant to grab all the email that were sent by Alfred Addisk or stored by Alfred Addisk, and they may or may not inform me of that 10 days later.
Or not at all.
Yeah.
Or not at all.
Yeah.
So it's
my
country. And what's interesting
what this law
really does, it protects Wall Street, because the Securities and Exchange Commission, because it's a civilian law enforcement agency, it can't obtain a criminal warrant. So they can't get any. They don't have access. They could do subpoenas, but they cannot do a criminal warrant. So they have no way, they will be limited in their investigations. So again, here's something else that protects Wall Street. So I found that interesting.
Like I say, some animals are more equal. We're all equal, but some are more equal, and if you're rich, you're more equal. You're entitled to special privileges.
So that's what your politicians in Washington are doing for you, and some of them they've been working on for 6 years.
Well, it's nice to know they've got it gone. You know, you got to wonder.
I know.
About a law that takes 6 years to write. How much motivation should there have been to write the law 6 years ago? Was there enough reason to write the law 6 years ago? If there was, why did it take them 6 years to actually produce the document? On the other hand, if they started out 6 years ago and they didn't really have any reason to write the thing, but they just thought this might be cool sometime in the future, what are we really dealing with here? Are these raw laws necessary? Are they part of some sort of a program that's planned and people are saying, well, we'll do this, then we'll do this, and then we'll do this. Pretty soon we'll have them all locked down.
Well, yeah. Speaking of laws, you have, you wanted to talk about Senate Leader McConnell about Obamacare repeal bill.
Obamacare? Is that what you said?
That's what it does. It kills us. Repeal bill is... near.
Yep, that's from the Washington Times, and it's kind of an odd little article. It says Congress has a chance to end Obamacare's cycle of broken promises and failures with just 51 votes. That's according to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He said, queuing up votes this week on a fast-track measure to gut much of the 2010 health care law and defund Planned Parenthood over its abortion practices. All right, sounds pretty impressive. But you get to the punchline on this thing, and this is a little like a law they worked on for 6 years. The GOP leader is leveraging a process known as budget reconciliation to avoid a Democratic filibuster and finally put an Obama an Obamacare repeal bill on President Obama's desk. Well, gee, that should work. We're gonna get 51 votes, and we're gonna put Obama repeal bill, Obamacare repeal, and we're gonna give it to President Obama. And who knows? Maybe he'll sign it. You know, I mean, it just becomes stupid. Come on, come on, come on. I'm a high school graduate. You understand? I'm not dumb enough to fall for this stuff. When the president picks up his pen, he'll have a real choice to make, Mr. McConnell, Kentucky Republican, said. He may well decide to stick to his rhetoric that the law is working better than even he intended and veto the bill. Well, that's a possibility, I guess. But he should instead decide to finally stand with a middle class that suffered enough from this failed law and sign it. We'll see. Oh, yeah, we'll see.
Hey,
I'm
going to
get my Swami hat. I'm going to do... I don't know. I'm going to channel. What was Johnny Carson? Who did he do? The great. I don't know. I can't remember who the character.
Anyway.
Yeah, something like that. Started with a K.
Cronky.
I don't know. But I'm going to start. I'm going to start channeling that comedy character and see if we can predict. Let's see if we can predict what's going to happen. It's just kind of an interesting bill. Yeah. You know, they admit that Obama is sure to veto the attack on his signature domestic achievement. This Obamacare was an achievement. The real effort would serve as a test run for 2017, when Republicans hope to scrap the law for good with a new president and twin majorities in Congress. I assume that means they're going to scrap Obamacare just like they scrapped abortion under the Bush administration when the Republicans were running the show that time.
Obamacare is here to stay.
It's
here to stay.
I won't believe that the Republicans are going to take it out. I won't believe it till I see it.
You can't repeal the bill. It's too ingrained already. But go ahead.
Well, it's just an article. Who did I say published this article? The Washington Times.
You know,
it's one of those things like, come on. Shouldn't this be up with Dilbert and, Shu and some of the other cartoons? Isn't that where this belongs? Or does this really belong as in the news section of the newspaper?
But it kind of makes you wonder where Mitch McConnell is coming from. I mean, the guy is a little whacked.
I think they're getting free drugs. I think that's what's going on up in the Senate and the House. I think it's why some people
straight
run
from Afghanistan.
To get free drugs, whatever you want, you know, no problem. Just call get one of your staff to run down to the office and we'll get you. You want coke? We got coke. We got heroin. We got everything. It doesn't matter. Some of it is just nuts. We've got another article here. That is the bizarre explanation for why the U.S. has avoided bombing ISIS oil wells. This article is written by Michael Snyder, the Economic Collapse blog. We've had Michael as a guest on the program once, probably a year or more ago. I don't remember when exactly. But he's a brilliant guy, does a lot of writing. We're going to take some commercials, and then we will come back and we will talk about this bizarre explanation for why the U.S. has avoided bombing ISIS oil wells. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
The ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and here's an article by Michael Snyder. And the headline is, "The Bizarre Explanation for Why the U.S. Has Avoided Bombing ISIS Oil Wells." And the point behind this, the article's close to 1,000 words, and I'm certainly not going to read them all. The argument behind this is that ISIS, the terrorist organization found in Syria and Iraq and wherever, is being funded by the sale of crude oil. It's being pumped out of those regions that they control. They get the crude oil. And according to reports that are bursting forth right now, that crude oil, virtually all of it's been sold into Turkey. Right? Now, Turkey is being bribed, effectively. They're selling the oil at about $20 a barrel, which is about half the market price. Which means the Turkish refineries, and maybe the Turkish economy, is getting crude oil at half the market price, which in theory should be great for the Turkish economy. Now, maybe the oil is not all going into the Turkish economy and benefiting the Turkish people. In fact, I'd be surprised if it was. But the flip side on that is, if I were running a refinery and I had access to crude oil that was half the market price, I could refine that crude oil. I could turn it into gasoline and kerosene and jet fuel and whatever else comes out of those refineries. And then I could sell it for full market price out on the street, and I could make a fabulous profit. But one way or another, ISIS is selling masses of crude oil to Turkey. And then where it goes from there, who knows? All right? Now, Turkey is in on this, and some people think this is the real reason why that these profits, according, in fact, President Erdogan of Turkey, his son allegedly is running the business that's receiving the crude oil. It's coming into Turkey. One of his sons is allegedly in charge of that. They're making a bunch of money, and Turkey is in NATO. Turkey is a United States ally. Turkey is, and one of the interesting things about this is if ISIS is selling crude oil at half the market price, then ISIS is, to some extent, putting pressure on the price of oil globally. If we've got one source of oil, and I don't argue that I don't know how much of an effect it can be, but it's hundreds of millions of dollars a day. Now, I don't know if that's, I don't know that that's significant in the oil business, but just the same, ISIS is helping to hold down the price of crude oil, which Saudi Arabia wants, because the United States asked Saudi Arabia to drop the price of crude oil in order to mess with Russia. And when you look at it, you say, look, a low price of crude oil is bad news for Russia, and ISIS is helping to keep the price of crude oil low, then it explains why Russia might have a serious axe to grind with Turkey. Turkey's helping to make this possible. And ISIS is lays at the height of the heart of this, and it would give Russia a great personal financial incentive. Said, these guys are trying to hold down the price of crude oil. Let's go bomb them. It might be part of the reason Russia is in the Middle East in the first place is to get at ISIS, because ISIS has helped knock the price of crude oil down. And the United States is, in theory, behind Saudi Arabia initiating the fall in the price of crude oil. It was up around $110, $15. And then Saudis stepped in and they started cutting production, and now it's down in the neighborhood of 40. Right? Saudis started this, but according to reports I've read, the United States essentially put the bird in the Saudis' ear and said, why don't you knock the price of crude oil down so we can get Russia? Well, it means even the United States is involved. It implies that even the United States is involved in funding or allowing ISIS to be funded, and that's why they haven't bombed the ISIS-controlled oil wells, and they have done virtually no bombing except since the Paris Terrorist Act. They've knocked out something like 45 trucks, all right, that are hauling crude oil from Iraq or Syria to Turkey. All right, not much. Russia's knocked out 1,000 of those trucks. Mm-hmm. And it is suspected that this may be the real reason why Turkey downed the Russian aircraft fighter in the last week or 10 days. It's because Russia has been going after this pipeline of trucks that are pouring over the border. And in fact, according to Putin, he has claimed that they have satellite intelligence. And he says vehicles carrying oil lined up in a chain going beyond the horizon. He's saying this is nonstop. It is continuous rush hour as truck after truck is hauling oil from the Middle East to Turkey. He described it as a living oil pipe. Day and night they are going to Turkey. Trucks always go there loaded and back from there empty. We are talking about a commercial-scale supply of oil from the occupied Syrian territories seized by terrorists. It is from these areas that the oil comes, and not with any others. And we can see it from the air where these vehicles are going. They know this is pouring into Turkey. Big money. I believe I saw elsewhere in the article where they talked about $800 million a day in crude oil is pouring into Turkey. Through this line of vehicles. Russia has said, all right, let's bomb the vehicles. Nobody else, the United States, hasn't bombed the vehicles until this in the last week or 10 days, and they've only allegedly bombed 45 of them. Plus, before they bombed any vehicles, according to this report, it says, after the horrific attacks in Paris, the Obama administration finally was shamed into bombing a few of these trucks. But 45 minutes before the U.S. military bombed them, they dropped leaflets telling the truck drivers to get out of your trucks now and run away from them. And Michael Snyder says, what kind of war on terror are we running? Why would we want to warn the terrorists to get away from their trucks? And what is the explanation? The Obama, we had represented from the former deputy director of the CIA, Michael Morell, was interviewed by Charlie Rose last Tuesday, if I understand correctly. And when he was asked why Obama hadn't bombed the ISIS oil wells and the supply line of oil going to Turkey, he said we didn't want to do environmental damage. You see? Well, that's great news. We have a new military policy where the only weapons we're going to use are the kind that don't do environmental damage. I don't know. Do you think an atomic bomb would do any environmental damage? Well, if so, maybe we'd better just pull them out of all our ICBMs and we can load them with water balloons. We can launch water balloons because they won't do any environmental damage. I mean, how about the projectiles coming out of tanks? Can they do environmental damage? I think they can. Let's disarm the tanks. The whole thing is, it's bizarre, and this is what he's talking about. This is what Michael Snyder is talking about. The bizarre explanation. Obama says he doesn't want to do environmental damage. Plus, he thinks this will contribute to global warming, and therefore, yada yada, we're not going to bomb these people. All right? It's crazy, and it isn't true. Even Obama can't be that dumb. All right? He's not that stupid. It's the only excuse they can come up with is, well, we're not bombing them to protect the snail darters, the beloved snail darters, and the spotted owl, Melody. That's the national bird. A lot of people don't know that, but we don't have a bald eagle anymore. We have the spotted owl. And in order to protect, and there might be some spotted owls over there in the Middle East, so we dare not bomb the terrorists. Well, just what? What are they going to do? The terrorists are going to be there forever unless you bomb them. The whole thing is crazy. And furthermore, it says at this point, Russia and Turkey are very close to a state of war. But as a member of NATO, the United States is obligated to help protect Turkey if a full-blown shooting war does break out. We are closer to World War III than we have been in decades. And yet most Americans are still completely and totally oblivious to what is taking place. Because things over in the Middle East threaten to spiral completely and totally out of control. Those are the words of Michael Snyder. I don't know if things are that grim or not, because maybe I'm just not, you know, sufficiently informed. But you look at this, and here's another article. Erdogan, he is the president of Turkey. He says he'll resign if oil purchases from ISIS are proven, after Putin says he has more proof. Right? Putin is claiming he has proof that the Islamic State gets cash by selling oil to Turkey. He points out the Islamic State takes advantage of the same network of smugglers, traders, and shipping companies that the KRG uses to transport Kurdish crude from Kurdistan to the Turkish port of Ceyhan. In light of this, some have speculated that Turkey shot down the Su-24 in retaliation for Russia's bombing campaign that recently has destroyed over 1,000 ISIS trucks. Syrian information, Omran al-Zub, said on Friday, all of the oil was delivered to a company that belongs to the son of Recep Erdogan. This is its president of Turkey. This is why Turkey became anxious after Russia began delivering airstrikes against IS infrastructure and destroyed more than 500 trucks with oil already. This really got on Erdogan and his company's nerves. Former National Security Advisor for Iraq, Muafak al-Rabail, said ISIS is selling around $100 million of stolen crude each month. My mistake, I thought they said each day, each month in Turkey. Here are some excerpts of his interview. He said in the last 8 months, ISIS has managed to sell $800 million worth of oil on the black market of Turkey. This is Iraqi oil and Syrian oil carried by trucks from Iraq, blah, blah, blah. At Fenn, they're selling at 50% of the market value. The whole thing is just, and one of the things, here's the Turkish President Erdogan now says that he will resign if Russian President Putin or anyone else can present proof that the Turks are buying oil from ISIS. And he goes on, in the quote, he said, "We are not that dishonest to buy from terrorists. If it is proven that we have, in fact, done so, I will leave office." It just cracks me up. He says, we are not that dishonest. Oh, we're dishonest, but we're not that dishonest. You understand? There's a line. Even we Turks have certain levels of ethics that we have to maintain. And what this is all showing us is that the conflict in the Middle East is being manipulated, manufactured, caused, exploited by a bunch of governments that are nothing but criminal enterprises, and that includes their own. Obama is claiming that the reason he didn't bomb this infrastructure that belongs to terrorists is because he didn't want to do environmental damage. Bunk.
Yeah, he didn't
bomb them because he's in it up to his substantial ears.
Yeah, he didn't want to bomb them to replace the trucks.
Yeah, no. He didn't want to interfere with the flow of oil that was funding the terrorists over there. And why? Because the terrorists are going after the Syrian President Assad. So we have the United States, if the reports are correct or roughly correct, we have the United States aiding and abetting terrorists, making sure that they gather $100 million a month from the sale of stolen oil in order to fund the terrorists. Don't have to, the American taxpayers won't have to pay for this, at least not yet. We're funding the terrorists who will claim up, so, oh my gosh, they're terrorists, they're terrible people, they're awful. All right? But we're giving them money big time. We're making sure they are allowed to get that money so they can go after Assad and dump him. And the whole object of this is to get rid of this President Assad in Syria. I'd say everything you see, you look at this closely. When they talk about geopolitics for global political struggles and so on, they really ought to call it global, they ought to call it geocriminality. Every government involved in this, Turkey, United States, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Syria, Iraq, they are all nothing but criminal enterprises who have gained control of the country they come from, and they try to sell themselves as the good guys, but in fact they are all for sale to the highest bidder, and they are all capable of robbery, murder, whatever else. And you look at it, and you just, I don't know, what are you going to do? Can any of you, I would like to have a contest. Is there anyone in the audience who can name a government that is not a criminal enterprise? Can you name one? I'd like to know. We're out of time, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival, and we'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.